After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. Lynn Harris is a British nose who's the force behind Perfumer H. This episode is a fascinating look into the world of perfumery and what it takes to be an independent perfumer. It's hard to express how dynamic and beautiful her work is. You'll just have to listen and then smell. Lynn, I am so excited to talk to you. Are you in your laboratory in London?
Right at this moment, I'm in my office, actually, in my secluded little office, yes.
Lynn, where are you from?
So I'm from the countryside in Yorkshire. Okay. It's a small town called Halifax.
Were your grandparents there too?
So my grandparents were in Scotland. So my mother is Scottish and she met my father in Yorkshire. It was quite lovely because in the school holidays, me and my sister used to get shipped off to Scotland to see my grandparents. And they were in the Highlands and they had a small holding. So it was quite a unique setting and quite idyllic for two small girls, yeah.
And what was it like, just filled with heather and...
My grandmother had this, they had two amazing gardens, these great walled gardens. So one was full of her favourite flowers. She had a thing about geraniums, so she had lots of different... They were mainly inside, actually, but outside she had lots of wildflowers, you know. Huh. She had lots of really tall stock, I always remember, and heathers. Oh, she had roses. She had peonies. Yeah, she was very eclectic, and she had lots of wild grasses as well, I remember. So yeah, we were kind of like cut off from the rest of the world. It was beautiful. And we used to spend like 6 weeks of the summer there.
Do you remember at the time being influenced by the garden and the flowers? And
yeah, I was a daydreamer. Do you know what I mean? I loved to play in the gardens. I was always outside. I loved the air up there. And I was always falling over, I remember. I was a bit naughty at the same time. And I remember it so vividly. It's incredible. It's like, I can quite honestly say there's not a day goes by I don't think of that place. It was so special to me.
What did you know about perfume or scent at the time and that could even be a career?
I didn't know anything, but I do remember the smells in my grandmother's house. So when we woke up in the morning, because it was a cottage, we were all together. Mm-hmm. You know, the rooms were really close. And I remember waking up to the smell of her baking the bread. I can smell the fire that my grandfather was you know, he was stoking up. Mm. And then she'd be making other things. And whichever day it was, because she had a sequence of days for each thing. So I think Monday was her baking day for like all our lovely treats, you know, like scones and she had a bread day, and then if it was a sort of jam season, she would make the jams. And then in the summer, I mean, because it was at the end of the summer, we'd always have these like tisanes with the blackcurrant. Mm. Oh my God. And we'd have that in the evening, and she'd have made, it was like, it was, you know, there's a, it was like it was the excess from the jam making she used to put into this tea, and oh my God,
I tasted
it. And it was so pure and good for you, but we used to have it hot by the fire. It just all played a part in my olfactory development, most definitely. I was just so blown away by it all, and just. And I also remember my grandmother's perfume.
I was going to ask that, yeah.
She had her style because she made all her own clothes. I mean, everything from her coats, and she had beautiful jewelry, and she was quite a prominent figure, but she always had this whisper of something. It was either a whisper of lavender. What else did you, and we were talking about it the other day with my mum, a whisper of lavender. I always remember this lavender smell. So it was always clean, the smell. There wasn't an artificial smell. And I think that's what's made me so obsessed with the integrity of my materials, because they were as well, and that's why they grew everything.
When you went to university, what did you study?
Well, I didn't go to university because I didn't do very well at school because, nothing seemed to, no teacher seemed to sort of connect with me, sadly. My parents, you know, were quite happy for me to leave, because actually school just said, I think it's best if Lynn doesn't carry on, for X, Y, Z reason. I think I was a bit naughty. And but I did have a job. I had this Saturday job in a fragrance shop, and it was the only place for miles that you could get your fine fragrance. And it was all the French brands like Arpège, and it was the start of the American sort of brands like, you know, there's Elizabeth Arden and Clinique and gosh, I loved it. And I, but the fine and Guerlain, there was, they had every single Guerlain, and I loved it. So I worked with them during this period where I was deciding what I was going to do. And then I came home one day, because my sister was at university, and I came home one day and I said, do you know what, Mum? I want to learn how to make fragrance. And Mum said, okay, well, look up some courses and let's see where, you know, what happens. And because my parents had a place in France, I didn't think, oh, I can't go to France. I don't speak French. I just thought, do you know what, Mum? There's this one in Paris. What do you think? And I got interviewed and they accepted me. So that's where I went.
Really? Yeah. And Lynn, what did your dad do? Like, did he own his own business, or?
He was a big entrepreneur and had a very successful architectural business. He was an architect and was quite a character, sort of renowned in the area. And yes, I watched, I have very beautiful memories of him, but he built his business, you know, from nothing. And I think that enabled me to do what I'm doing today. I just thought, gosh, you know, anything's possible.
You would have to have had some example of just jumping off to doing something that you'd never considered before, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we all need that, don't we?
Yeah, we need like a model or something, I think.
Yeah.
You essentially from high school went straight into studying to be a nose.
So school in Paris was quite interesting. So I was 2.5 years with her. I did 6 months with her in her lab. But I found this small school that this female perfumer had set up, and she was quite a pioneer because it was in the 90s, not a lot of women were choosing perfumery as their career. It was male orientated.
Why do you think that is, Lynn?
Just because, you know, my generation was the first one of the first generations coming through to work, you know, and, you know, to have a career. Mm-hmm. You know, Monique was quite unique. She when she taught me, she was a lot older, and she'd sort of stood out as one of the first sort of, you know, recognized female noses. She did a lot of work with Anique Goutal in the early days.
Oh, wow.
And she worked for L'Artisan and Guerlain, and she was a brilliant perfumer. And the school she set up is still going today, because she passed away 5 years ago. But it's a legacy to her and her talent. Hmm. But the school was really interesting. I was her first British student. And I think, you know, she took me under her wing because she could see that I was, you know, I didn't, because basically there was a lot of marketing people as well. So you could go into evaluation. And there was very few that went into being a perfumer. In my year, there was just me and this other girl. Hmm. For example, my best friend, she was from Bologna. She wanted to be a perfumer. And then one day, sort of in the second year, she turned around and said, I just can't do it. And she's actually one of the best evaluators now.
Because it was too intense.
Yeah. So she just couldn't write the formulas. We were together one day and she said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm just writing a formula. I've got this idea. And she said, wow, you can just do it from smelling. And I said, yeah. But I knew I had something within me. I've been playing around with materials. I sort of set up my own laboratory at home. With all these materials from grass. I was working day and night at just trying to get simpler chords. Mm. Whereas my best friend, she loved the idea of being a perfumer, but it just wasn't happening for her. So it didn't happen to everybody. I was very driven, and I knew I had something within me to create.
Will you tell me a little bit about what those courses entailed? Like, what is the coursework? How many years does it take?
Yeah, so you go through all the different families, let's start with. So basically you learn how to smell, let's say, on day one. So that's quite a process in itself.
Were you straight A's from the beginning?
Not to this degree.
Right.
Not to this degree. So to be taught, it sounds very simple. Oh, gosh, I can smell. But actually, you can't.
No.
You need to learn how to smell to this level that they require you to smell. You know, because to be able to detect all these different facets from green, balsamic to, you know, oceanic, you know, all these little facets are quite detailed. And within a formula, it's very, you know, to be able to detect them is another level. And I remember green. She keeps saying, can you smell the green notes? I remember, I can't smell the green notes. And then all of a sudden, bing, you can smell the green notes with the citrus and everything comes alive. For the first year, I had headache after headache after headache. You know, I had to really work through the pain of just being able to retain all this olfactory knowledge.
Yeah.
And then translate it in my brain and then retain that information to be able to then go into a store and smell a perfume and say, hey, that's leather. This has a smoky and this has a wood facet. You know, so it took a good 12 months before I started to see these different elements. And then you start smelling raw materials. But you only smell about 100 raw materials in total in your whole sort of course. It's not until you go to a fragrance house and do a rigorous sort of training under a master. I mean, that's what I did. Basically, you start really putting everything together and putting your style and being able to write quite intense, you know, formulas and express your olfactory sort of ideas a bit more detailed. At school, you're just learning the basics. You know, you learn how to smell, you learn the different fragrance families. There are 5 fragrance families, and you go into detail for each of those families, and then you learn the different facets, and then you learn how to evaluate. And then at the end, we did simple composition work, which was using bases and some raw materials. You do an analysis of a fine fragrance, let's say, you know, Arpège. And then you basically try and do all the accords that make it that smell. And we did that, you know, for a good 6 months. And then I had 6 months after my course where I worked with Monique in her laboratory, which was incredible.
Did you ever worry that you didn't have it? I mean, did you ever have a day where you thought, maybe I can't do this?
No, never. Never. It was just oozing out of me.
I love
it. Monique knew that as well, and she was very proud of me.
Oh. Yeah. What was the most important advice that Monique gave you?
She was worried that I wouldn't have a life outside perfumery. She was really worried that I wouldn't, you know, ever get married, or I wouldn't. Yeah, she was always saying, but please, Lynn, you know, go out and enjoy yourself. she thought I was too obsessed. But no, in a positive way.
Yeah.
But then when I went to Grasse, my master that I worked under, his biggest, you know, his advice to me was learn to be patient. That was the best advice I ever had.
Will you talk to me about Grasse a little bit and explain to the listeners kind of what it is and why it is?
Yeah, Grasse is this magical place. And I can remember to this day going down the path to the fragrance house. And I can remember somebody, this lorry tooting at the back of me. And it gave me such a jump. And he was just like, get out of my way sort of thing. And then in another language, obviously. And I sort of followed him down, and he was offloading all the oak moss from.
Oh, wow.
Traveled overnight. And he was really tired, you know, it was in the morning. And all this wonderful oak moss. And I was like, wow. And that was me, the magic, you know. I just thought, this is an incredible place. And that's where extraction took place. Now extraction is done all over the world, but still a lot of it they do in Grasse. And they have this big they've got a new site where they do some incredible things. I fell in love with Robert. I got introduced to them through a contact who liked my work and said, you should meet Robert A.
Robert A. Grasse.
Yes, my fragrance house. And I got introduced to the family, and I went for an interview, and they they liked me and they liked my work. And then they put me under a master, Richard Melchior. And he was just this incredible man that gave me 3 years of his undivided attention.
And just the two of you?
Yes, it was a very precious time. And it was a really interesting time as well. There wasn't, grass was very calm. It was very quiet. I think the fragrance industry has got more intense now. I don't think you could ever have that time with a perfumer now.
Yeah.
There's so much money to be made and there's so little time. But there was time when I was there, you know what I mean? I could spend the whole afternoon with Richard in smelling, and we'd often go to places, you know, off the Côte d'Azur. Like we'd walk down Route Napoleon and you know, we'd drive to a special spot and then go for a walk and then have a picnic and talk about what we could smell. And it was incredible. And I mean, he was a second generation Grassoir perfumer. So it was, you know, it was incredible to listen to him and his knowledge of naturals and the fields that surrounded grass when he was growing up.
And that is why grass is what it is, right? Is because it's like the perfect growing zone for roses, lavender.
Yeah. But what was really sad, basically, when I was there, all the fields were being sold off for real estate. And it was so tragic. And so there was and basically all the fragrance houses were focusing on Paris and New York. And so grass was this sort of forgotten capital of fragrance, you know what I mean? It was just really sort of quite shabby. And then in the last sort of 15 years, it's really come alive. At the museum, there's various families, and Robert A's one, the Fragonard sisters are another that have really put a lot of, you know, they've just put a lot of energy and time and love back into it. And it's this incredible place that everybody should go and visit if you love fragrance. My fragrance house is very special to me, and I've been with them over 25 years now.
Wow. Is there a governing body for the perfume industry, like an accreditation to become a nose?
Well, no. So basically, it's after college. This is the time. So you graduate from your school. And basically, then your interview with your fragrance house is your biggest challenge, because they don't basically take anybody on. And so if they don't like your work or you're just not giving them anything, they you know, it's a very frustrating profession because there's only a few places. Huh. And really, I remember when I was at Robert A, a lot of people said, but so you're not from a family of, you know, you know, in the south of France, or you're not. I said, no, nobody in my family is from the fragrance industry. I'm from, you know, so, but actually I think because I was British, because I was quirky and quite tomboyish, I think that's why they kind of said, do you know what? She's different. Let's let her in. And all the masters, you know, because they all had their office and they all smoked and told me all the stories, you know what I mean? And then I used to go on these lunches with them where they used to get, you know, have a glass of wine or two and tell me all these magical stories of what went on. And I was just a sponge and I took it all in. And it was just the most wonderful time.
And so when you went to Robert A from university, do you bring like a portfolio as you would as a designer an artist?
Yeah. So you have an interview, you show your work. And also I said I only wanted to work in the alcoholic perfumery department and candles.
And what does that mean?
So there's other departments. So you can go into household, you know, detergents, you know, there's lots of different departments. And if you're doing the whole, you know, you're going in from the bottom, you have to go through each department. But I just said, I just want to, these are my areas, the three areas I want to do. And that was it. And also I said, I want to come and go because I lived half the time there and half the time in London. And that's how it kind of worked. So it was my second home. And I went backwards and forwards for 3 years. I learnt their amazing portfolio of materials, you know, thousands and thousands. I mean, Robert A. are renowned for naturals. They have fields all over the world. They have the best extraction, you know, they have really amazing extraction methods now, which today just blow you away, you know, what they've learned and how they've progressed.
Your training with Monique was mostly about learning how to identify the 100.
Yes.
And then your work with Robert A was more about your creativity, your intuition, and trying to blend.
Yeah, developing my style as a perfumer, developing who I am as, how do I become a perfumer? It's really developing what I feel is me. And that's what my master brought out. He taught me the complete library of materials. We went through them meticulously every day. I learned them by heart, you know, through my olfactory, you know, and then it was about progressing my formula work and my, you know, my creativity, you know, how I could make a beautiful smell and on the skin, you know, and just really perfecting my style and my work. And that was quite interesting. Also, I had this special arrangement, which I have today, where, because I don't work day to day in their fragrance house, I come and go. I'm one of their independent perfumers, and there's only two of us that exist at Robert A. But I work remotely, and I have their code book and everything, and I get all the new materials sent to me and everything. But yes, I work remotely, and I have my own clients, and that's how it's worked so well.
Do you have any of the original scents that you did with Monique that were in your portfolio? Do you kept those? And do you still love them? I mean, have you changed? I mean, do you get more sophisticated? Do you get more simple? Like, how does that work across a lifetime?
Oh, I think you get more simple. You definitely do. I think with age, you just want to sort of you don't have anything to prove anymore. So I don't fascinate about this material that's driving me mad and think, oh, how can I bring, you know, I don't complicate things anymore. I just have a confidence, you know, just using the palette that I prefer, that I want to use, because this is what makes my work sing. Do you know what I mean? It's not about, I have nothing to prove anymore, really. I feel, yes, I have things to prove to myself, but I'm quite comfortable in my space. You know, I want to make people smell beautiful, but I want to use amazing materials, and I have my signature style, and I have an audience who appreciate that. And that, I think, you know, and that really sort of, you know, means a lot to me. And that's what I'm about. I don't want to follow. Yeah, I have a philosophy, and I think there's a lot of fragrances out there, so I don't need to join in the noise of that. I just want to make fragrances that whisper and make your heart feel full of joy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Because you do it. Will you talk to me about the middle of your career and talk about Miller Harris?
Miller Harris I did quite early on, actually. It was one of the first sort of milestones. But I was working for an American brand, and I still did that while I started Miller Harris, you know, and it was just me and Christophe. And we loved, you know, and so the first 10 years were, you know, incredible. But I think we were a bit sort of shocked by how people liked the brand. You know, we had this small shop in Notting Hill, and then it all sort of took off, and then we have Barney's.
Christophe is your husband, and he ran the business with you. Does he have any background in perfume, or what was his background?
So he's from, well, I met him in Grasse.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes, I did. I met him in Grasse. Yeah, so I was the talk of the town. But yes, because he was working in this hotel, and he was just stopping through. He'd had a very stressful life. He was working all the hours. He hated, you know, sort of marketing. And so then he left and then came back, and he'd hurt his leg. And so he was only staying for a month, and then he met me. And that was it. Yeah. He stayed. He came to London and never looked back.
Have you created Miller Harris, just the two of you?
The two of us created it. Yes.
I mean, one of the things that I remember most about, it's funny when you ask people if they know Miller Harris, when they see the branding, the art, the graphic design was so beautiful. And I think that was as important. I mean, the fragrances were amazing, but the graphic design was so good.
Yeah, I know. I know. I just want to, I love this botanical print.
I know.
I was obsessed with it. And then I loved bright, you know, the bright colors. Mm. Yeah, it was very eclectic as well. Yeah, it was very interesting. I really enjoyed that brand. I left after 15 years. I sold it to private equity, actually. And I stayed for a year, and then they allowed me to start my new brand. And that was 10 years ago, over 10 years ago.
And what did you learn from that experience? Because I mean, like when you...
learned a lot. Yeah.
I know you did. what was the most important thing you learned?
Oh, gosh. I learned to go with your instinct and don't ever think your instinct's not right, because it always is, as a brand owner. And don't be swayed by others.
Yeah.
But do listen to your team. Mm. Always listen to your team. And your team is everything to you. I did miss my team, because in my final year at Millhouse, the team began to change. Mm. And that's when you know that the brand isn't, you know, yours anymore. Because people make your brand. Yeah. It's not just about you. It's about the people and how they express your vision with you and help you evolve. They're everything. And that's what I found wonderful about Perfumer H. And that, I think that's why I've started, you know, I said at the beginning, I have to work with like-minded artists as well. Mm. And that's just been a wonderful journey.
Why did you get to the point where you were ready to sell Miller Harris?
Because I had something else that I wanted to get out. And and I just felt it had changed. Mm. It didn't need me anymore. Yeah. It had grown up. And that was, it was a big thing to sort of recognize, but I knew it was time. Mm-hmm. And when I knew it was time, you know, you do feel quite emotional, but at the same time, you you have to wave goodbye and there's something else waiting for you. And you just have to believe that and not fear that. And I think a lot of people are like, no, you can't. I was like, yeah, no, I have to. I remember Crystal saying, are you sure? And I said, yep, I'm sure.
How did you say, this is how I'm going to do it differently this time?
I think it's me grown up. I think it's me more confident, more sort of knowing who I am. And also, you know, learning, to say no to things as well. I don't have to do that because everybody does that. Do you know what I mean? This is how we do it. Just being really confident about how you see things and not following, because that's what happens. And that's what, you know, I found in the last year, we were just following a pattern of, okay, we've got to launch something else. We've got to do this. So sort of going with your own sort of wind, your own, you know what I mean? Your own feeling and belief and instinct is just wonderful.
I read a quote that you said, naturals are the soul of perfumery and the chemicals are the magic, and the two go hand in hand always.
The science of perfumery is just mind-boggling. It's wonderful. And without it, a perfume is lifeless, I have to say, really. And I love naturals. And don't get me wrong, I do have an orange flower fragrance, which I wear a lot, which is completely natural and I love it. Mm. Naturals are really complex and they're really difficult to use. Hmm. And I've made it my thing that I know them inside out. They are, you know, I've made them my friends and I have a love-hate relationship with them, but they're difficult to use in perfumery and there's lots of legislation with it.
Will you give me some examples of what naturals are?
The woods, cedar wood, frankincense,
Angelica, yeah, right. Okay.
All these wonderful, lemon from Sicily, all these wonderful things I've got in this formula I'm looking at the moment. You have all these amazing constituents that make up a natural, and it's using these individually that make fragrance come alive, like rose. So rose has so many different constituents, and then these constituents in their own right are so beautiful. I when I show them to people, they're like, my God, this. So you have the rose alcohols, for example. So you and if you smell them individually, they are so poetic and so soft and gentle. It's how I reuse them in and we put in different ratios, you know, in a formula. And I can make my rose smell better than the rose itself. That's perfumery. Making a smell that smells of leather and you have no leather in it. How do you do that? I mean, that's my thing. I love to do that. And that's, you know, my obsession. You know, I've got this obsession with very simple things in life. You know, smoke, for example, is often a thing people associate my work with. And you know, there's so many different ways of expressing it. But chemicals aren't what you think they are. They're not negative. They're right. Positive.
Because they build the fragrance and allow it to stay, or, I mean...
They allow the naturals to come out. Mm. They, you know, they're binding, they bring, you know, they just bring a magic. They bring a sparkle to a fragrance. And it's learning, you know, which ones give your formula the structure you need. Do you know what I mean? And whether it's the way you put it, you know, it's in your florals or your wood, you know what I mean? There's you have these different ways of working your woods or your ambers by adding the naturals. You really begin to sort of allow things to start, expressing your landscapes, you know, your feelings, your emotions. But yes, there's a structure to it all, and the chemicals, and the synthetics. You know, synthetics don't exist in nature. And all, for example, all your musks are synthetics, and these are wonderful. Huh. And today, it just gets better and better. But still, I refer to some of the old synthetics. But you know, it's very interesting what's coming through as well. Some incredible. It's a really interesting time in perfumery. It's a you know, there's a lot of braveness happening out there. But at the same time, I think we've kind of gone back to simplicity as well, and just trying to protect the honesty of the industry. I think that's very important.
Will you talk a little bit about perfume and just the history of perfume in general and scent? I mean, people have been scenting themselves for thousands of years, right?
Oh. Well, the Egyptians first came, they founded perfumery, really. And they were so ahead of their time, the Egyptians. And then it was the French that made it all really, you know, wearable. They took away their oils, because you can't put oils on clothing. It's going to dirty your clothing. Of course, the French cleaned it all up and made it, you know, you could apply to your silk dress. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And, you know, it was alcoholic perfumery was born. Chanel 5, you know, all those fragrances from sort of, you know, the wartime, you know, are incredible. You know, the sort of early 1900s, you know, 1890, if you think of Gicchi.
Yeah, Gicchi.
You know, Guerlain is a really interesting fragrance house for its history. And, there's different sort of benchmark fragrances for each era. I always look at it and just find it fascinating, Guerlain. It's just a beautiful brand. It's just a wealth.
And still beautiful and hasn't sort of gone on.
Still beautiful. Yeah.
Do you wear the same fragrance always?
Well, I don't wear fragrance because because it distracts my nose.
That's so fascinating. Yeah. Did you get COVID? I mean, do you ever worry about losing your nose?
I was a little bit nervous with COVID. Yeah. But no, I did get COVID and I was fine. And I remember actually my Christoph came from my fragrance house, one of the owners of Robertet, and he brought me lots of beautiful new materials. And I couldn't meet him, but he left me this box of beautiful materials. And I can remember Caroline dropping them around for me. And I was like, I can smell them, Caroline. And I was just so relieved.
But do you have a favorite?
Yes. Well, I've got this fragrance I made for myself with orange flower. I'm a bit obsessed with orange flower. At the moment. But then sometimes I just yearn for a real sort of wonderful, I quite like transparent type of wood fragrances. That those are on my days off.
You are a nose, correct? I mean, is there a governing body that christens you a nose?
I think with time you reach that, I think your fragrance house determines
Oh, really? Yeah.
Whichever fragrance
right,
house you come from. I think that's your governing body. Without a fragrance house, you are nothing.
You're not. Yeah.
And that is unfair, because there's a lot of amazing people out there creating smells who are independent, actually.
Right, sure.
And that's, you know, I think that's commendable. I really admire that. And I really love that, that the fact it's happening, you know, and that's a kind of different way of looking at perfumery. And it should, you know, and it's like cooks who don't have the formal training. I think it's great.
Are there more women doing it than there were when you started?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Every time I go now, I'm like, oh, it's a joy. Just wonderful. Yeah, just lots and lots of girls now. It's wonderful.
I don't think you had a prom, but in Yorkshire, but yeah. That is the question we ask everybody, is what they wore to the prom. So I'm wondering, what did you wear to your wedding to Christoph? And was it in Grasse or was it in Scotland? or what was your favorite dress that your grandmother made you?
Yeah, no, my grandmother. Yeah. Because I'm still waiting to wear that dress for Christoph.
Oh.
Yeah. So he can listen to this.
Okay.
Isn't that funny? So, oh gosh, what? I guess Martin Margiela. I have this special Martin Margiela piece that I do love to put on for a special occasion.
And what does it look like?
It's the Yves Klein blue. It was sort of one of his last collections, and it's a beautiful, you know, one of his silk fabrics, and the buttons are just so beautifully sewn in the same silk, and they come up front. And it's sleeveless and long. Yes. And I have a pair of his amazing boots that I always wear with them.
I love it.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
I could see you in that beautiful blue. I think that'd be beautiful. Well, thank you so much. I loved spending time with you. And I can't wait to see you in the next couple of months. I'll come say hey. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drasda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.